Oh, the boss of Formula One did an interview yesterday. He said this year Formula One's going according to plan.
But Stefano, it isn't. It really isn't. Really is not. No.
And the revealing part is that Stefano Domenicali sounded completely at ease saying so. To me, it was the corporate slick version of a crash out caught in 4K. Because according to Domenicali, 5 years ago, manufacturers wanted a 50-50 split between combustion and electrical power. So F1 built the rules around that demand, not what is good for Formula One itself, what the sport might like as the evolution to the turbo hybrid era, which in of itself was catering to manufacturers too. I'm guessing the last time we really were thinking about Formula One itself was the 2.4 litre V8, which might come around again in 2031. And what has that produced? Cars losing huge speed through corners they used to take flat, qualifying sessions shaped up as much by deployment as driver commitment, and crashes that have turned a technical concern into a safety one. That does not sound like a formula ready for prime time. Yet, the FOM CEO called it a success and said the people criticizing it are criticizing it for the sake of it and having no effect on them. Okay, just stop for a moment and think about what he just said. Not only did he dismiss the criticism aimed at Formula One itself, but he's also ignoring and rejecting the frustration around the disagreements. And that tells you a lot about how F1's choosing to sell itself in 2026, and it really gives off the impression that those who like the regulations and those who hate it are being divided and conquered by the bosses, and that therefore their agenda can remain true. But first, let's try and be fair here. The regulations for 2026 are not all bad. I mean, the chassis seems pretty tidy. They're smaller, they're lighter, they're more nimble in the corners when they're allowed to be fast, so in that regard, they're pretty good. And dirty air has been reduced. We're no longer going through processions and DRS trains as much as we were during the ground effect era, so that is a plus. And not to mention there's plenty of wheel-to-wheel racing when the battery's not the main star of the show, when you're not having to worry about it. That does count for something, because it means that these regulations are not a lost cause. The chassis? That's not the problem. It's the powertrain that's the problem. Fernando Alonso said it best, that high-speed corners these days are nothing more than charging stations, that you have to intentionally go slower through those corners in order to go faster down the straights. And even then, you are then subjected to superclipping. That is a really weird sentence to say about Formula One. I had a lot of hope for these regulations. I do see some good points about them. I can see the good side of the tactics and all, about who can really interpret these rules the best, but equally, if these cars are not able to run at their full potential, that is a major drawback. And then it's the art of overtaking itself. One of those things that Stefano said, that what's artificial? An overtake is an overtake. That is a gross simplification, because what Lando Norris said, and I know it's Lando Norris, but he did say something legit, is that sometimes when a driver instinctively does not want to make an overtake, the car takes a look at the situation and goes, oh, I think I'll overtake, thank you very much. And then he made another point that, yeah, the overtake may look good on TV, but was it something the driver really wanted? Maybe not so much. And Carlos Sainz, his buddy, took it from aesthetics to safety. As a GPDA director, he had heard the warnings, and after Behrman's crash, he said it hoped it would finally force people to listen to the drivers because the racing was not okay. That's the pattern here. Alonso on what the car is doing, Norris on how the racing feels, Sainz on what happens when that gap becomes dangerous, and when drivers from different teams and different ends of the grid keep arriving at the same complaint, you really cannot dismiss this all as isolated moaning. And what was Domenicali's public messaging to all of those drivers that were sharing their grievances and their worries? Well, let me tell you, it was, don't bite the hand that feeds you, matey. In his mind, the drivers got real popular and real rich thanks to Formula One, and he told us all in that interview that, is there any other motorsport in the world that can offer you that same amount of popularity and exposure and wealth? No, there isn't. So just deal with it. But the real question is, though, do these drivers really want the money? Like, really want it? Or do they really wish to have job fulfillment? As in, that memory I got from Austria 2020 when Carlos got back into a car for the first time since the Roni Roni. He went, oh, this is fast. Oh! But if they could just have enough in their pocket to be able to go karting every day, I think that would do. And also, I was thinking, Stefano, was that a threat? He's also specific about Verstappen too. And this quote I'll share with you for your consideration. Ahem. He knows that his voice also has a weight, and he needs to respect that weight, because sometimes some people can take it the wrong way, and this is something that we should not allow to happen. Now, yeah, we should not allow that to happen about safety criticism? Because the sport gave him money and a platform he should factor in before he actually utters something out of his mouth? Since when did Max care about his platform? Since when? It reminds me of the time Ben Suliam told drivers that how he runs the FIA is none of their business back in December 24. That was obnoxious, it was dismissive, and wrong, but I can't believe we're at a point where Suliam looks like the more rational man. But here's the difference. Ben Suliam was a rally driver. He competitively raced dangerous machinery. He knows what it feels like to trust a vehicle with his body at speed, and that it won't kill him.
There is logic in what he says.
Whereas Domenicali, his background in Formula One was that of a team principal. One of his biggest accolades is winning a Constructors' Championship for Ferrari and using his leverage within Formula One to get Haas onto the grid. Those are fair enough. Those are all perfectly good attributes about the man. But there is a key difference. He was never a driver. His relationship with danger is of the managerial variety, not the physical one. That's what Ben's got over Stefano. His understanding of what 130R should feel like, of what it may mean to close on a slow car at 50 kilometers an hour difference on a flat out straight or going into a corner, that's secondhand knowledge at best. And yet, he's the one telling drivers that their safety criticism is something that should not be allowed to happen. To me, that's not a subtle warning. Right there, in that moment, he was telling us all, straightly, as in, without a sense of remorse, I looked at his eyes, they were looking really, really defined, that in Formula One, it's the sport's commercial interests that matter more than what the drivers think. They really had an honesty and integrity problem. We all saw that thing after Australia with the number of overtakes being shown and the hidden comments and replies underneath that response, and then on pretty much every response since, and not to mention cutting away from the onboard camera at critical moments when it might start to show the fallacies and the weaknesses of the platform, such as when super clipping happens, the Speedmaster graphic and the title, and the Antonelli poll app. I'll get to that later. All the while, the CEO has not become remorseful or reflective or quieter about his vociferousness toward Formula One. No, he's doubling down now. He's really becoming tone-deaf. It's almost like he's intentionally trying to cause scorn and tribalism between the newer fans and the older fans. But change, I can assure you, is coming no matter what he says. It's just, he's probably trying to find a way to paint it in a way that he can take all the credit and say, oh, this is all part of the plan the entire time. Whereas, in reality, it's the FIA who's been the more rational one, trying to take this all on the chin. And as Nicholas Tombassis, the head of FIA single-seaters, has said, we're not going to get any credit for this. We're just going to get criticized if we do something wrong, and if we do something right, no one's going to frame it right. Reminds me of that quote from Futurama. If you do things right, people won't be sure you've done anything at all. Because after the April 9th meeting that they conducted, the FIA pledged a commitment to making tweaks to some aspects of the regulations. Yes, it's only tweaks, but at least it was said from a logical perspective. Somewhere more rational and careful with plenty of data to pass through, rather than just saying, we're doing it because we made the drivers richer, so shut up. Bigger changes will most likely come later in the year or next year, as in a phased approach. It's not ideal, but it seems like there is a plan. Yeah, the world isn't really a patient place these days, is it? On that note, what is Domenicali trying to prove? What working is he actually using here? Well, he is talking about surveys and viewing figures, and this is not the first time he has done this by saying, oh, well, people like this format, and people like sprints, and people like shorter races and stuff like that. Realistically, I think the young fans, instead of wanting shorter games or races, they just want better accessibility. That's what I think. Let me know in the comments if you agree. This time around, he's pointing to audience growth across the first three races and presenting that as vindication, and the journalists are following. Okay, but that only proves the show is still commercially healthy. It doesn't prove the criticism is wrong, though. And the split in those numbers is the interesting part. Some newer or growth markets are up, but then you read other stats saying legacy markets are down, sharply. However you interpret that, one reading is hard to ignore. The fans with the strongest reference point for what F1 used to feel like are the least convinced by what this version has become. That's the bit Domenicali's tone gives away the most. You don't talk this vociferously and critically about your critics unless you've already decided that whatever they've got to say has very little consequence to you, as in you're just going to ignore them. I mean, you've only got to look at what F1's been doing the last couple of years. There's the broadcast deals such as with Apple TV. There's the push for Las Vegas being their home race. F1 operates it themselves. They've got the sponsors, they've got the new markets, they've got the brand new Drive to Survive generation, and I still find it really baffling that India wants a Grand Prix again, yet Formula One is saying no. There are so many millions of people within India. I think 100 million I saw in one stat, I can't remember the source, but there is a lot of demand. But no, F1 immediately shot that one down. But you see what I'm getting at here? That's where the commercial momentum is. And when you really see it from that point of view, and don't just immediately say, nah, Stefano's a git, what he is saying starts to make a little bit more sense. I'm trying to be fair here. Because what he just told us out loud was a commercial calculation. It's not like the established fan base has suddenly become completely irrelevant. It's just not what he's trying to aim for anymore. And that kind of saddens me because I'm looking forward to the day my daughter actively watches Formula One races with me and wishes to interact. And if it's not really connected or aimed at both of us, I feel like there might be some sort of disconnect where I don't really get that same joy as she might. As in, I don't like that thought. And also, when you think about it, it's the complete opposite of the Eccleston era. A man who had no interest in appealing to the kids, and more towards their grandparents who were rich and can afford Rolexes, you know, at least three on each wrist. But mind you, given how expensive F1 merch can be and their tie-ins with luxury brands, Rolexes look relatively cheap. Which brings us back to the regulations. Because the manufacturers who shape this powertrain architecture aren't trying to win back, say, the 50-year-old fan from Madrid or something like that, no. Their intentions with this new F1 were to reach the same new demographic Liberty Media have been chasing. The regulations and the rhetoric were pointed in exactly the same direction. The 50-50 split was not meant to produce great racing per se, as in that was not the main goal. In reality, that was the trend within the automotive industry at the time of the early 2020s, as in more hybridification or a bigger push towards electrification entirely. But Formula One can't do that because Formula E has an exclusivity deal through 2039 and beyond. No, instead, Formula One went down the road of what would be the most attractive to manufacturers who were really loving the idea of road relevancy. And it's something the FIA is partial to as well. And being able to target a brand new audience, because something you've got to realise that in China, the Audi symbol, the four rings, is not used there for their newer cars. Instead, it's just the word Audi. As in, it's a different marketing approach. And therefore, it's a different marketing approach to brand new fans in Formula One. As in, the fans that were quick to realise what was going on here paid the price. Because here's what makes this look particularly elegant when it comes to the art of crisis management. He's also in the same interview subtly dismantling the justification for the regulations that caused it. A very elegant case, I think, of passing the buck. He said that he expects the next regulatory cycle to be definitely different. Yeah, I think that video I made last week about maybe getting V8 turbos in 2031 or maybe slightly sooner could actually have some legs. The automotive industry, as he said, has started to reconsider its push to full-on electrification and instead walk it back slightly towards more hybrid technologies or, the biggest trend right now, of looking into conventional combustion engines but this time with carbon-neutral fuel. Because yes, the EV transition has pretty much stalled, as in the premise back in 2021 and 2022, you could easily argue, has perhaps collapsed. Yeah, he's right there in front of the camera telling us all that the regulations penned based on now a collapsed premise were still a success. Yeah, that to me is a case of, hey, don't blame us. We were only following where the puck was going at the time. If you want somebody to blame the manufacturers for leading us on. Yeah. But even then, it just goes to show that you don't really have the instinct to follow the FIA. No, you just want to try and woo in manufacturers again, don't you? But at the same time, it wasn't a panicked observation or an obvious lie or anything like that, no. It's simply a realization of what he's been paid to do. He is the CEO of a commercial operation. It's his job to sell the product. If he just came out and said, no, you're right, it's absolutely terrible. Yeah, I don't know why we did this. The share price would tank. His job would be on the line and manufacturers would panic. Sponsors would flee. Partners would just go, what? What's this guy saying? As in, is this series not worth it anymore? Have we been led on here? They're going to cancel contracts if he said anything other than what he just said today. Yet he has constructed a vision of Formula One where the manufacturers are responsible for this, and they, Liberty Media, are not. They were but a reasonable broker who were just responding to market forces, that's all. And oh, those same market forces stalling or ceasing entirely? Oh, well, that was just circumstantial. How could we have known? Not we decided or, oh, we built this together. No, it was straight up the manufacturers that inspired these rules. That's what he's saying. He's passing the buck. I'm telling you this. It's almost as if he and everyone else within Formula One management was standing in a completely different room entirely, trying to hear what was going on, and then Toto and Fred and the light just came in and said, ah, well, Stefano, have a look at these regulations. We believe this might be a good idea for Formula One and make it more exciting and stuff like that. What do you think? Sure. Can you bring Audi and Honda on board? Ah, yes, let me see what we can do when we're more prepared to drop the MGUH if you want. But let's be clear here. FOM is not a passive vessel for manufacturer preferences. They look at that 50-50 hybrid split and a battery that can't sustain power through a full straight at most circuits and went, oh yeah, we can make this work. So, who shaped that future most aggressively and who had the most to gain from it? Well, if you've been around the channel for a while, you'll know where I'm going here. And if you're not, make yourself comfortable. You see, Alejandro Agag founded Formula E. He built the all-electric championship that has become the butt of Max Verstappen's jokes, despite it now being a fully credited FIA championship, so it is a perfectly legitimate sporting series. Thusly, he has every right to protect his own commercial interests, which were under fire, thanks to the likes of Verstappen and his fans that jumped on the bandwagon. So here is what Agag told the Spanish publication Marca about what's going on here to protect himself and his sport. Ahem. When Mercedes left Formula E, it was because they wanted to copy what was happening there and transform it to Formula One. The great inspirations for what is happening now in Formula One are Mercedes and Toto Wolff. He saw what was there and said, I'm going to bring this all to Formula One and merge Formula One and Formula E. And because it was his idea, he now has an advantage, and this shows in the difference he has compared to the others. Yep, Mercedes stand to gain the most people to preserve their hybrid-coded superiority. Something you could argue has been the case since 2014. And with them having plenty of customer teams who believed, hey, if we've got a Mercedes engine in the back, we're going to be rolling in points and podiums. It gave them so much more. It gave them opportunities to gather more data. They gathered more money. Sure, it meant they had to spend more in resources to make those extra power units. But all the stuff that was coming in, the cost-benefit ratio, oh, there were plenty of benefits. And before a wheel had turned in anger this season, analyst Peter Windsor had already identified two separate structural Mercedes edges. The fundamental architecture of how they integrated the hybrid system and separately, the deployment strategies. The gathered knowledge of how to recover energy efficiently around a lap. His conclusion? F1 was headed into an era where energy management would be the one thing that differentiates cars. And with the 50-50 split, this might have been even more pronounced than it was back in the previous regulations, the previous turbo hybrid iteration, where it was 80-20 in favor of the combustion engine, as in the battery element was there, but it was very much in the background, and it only had moments when it could really start a party, as in party mode. But naturally, Toto's never publicly confirmed any of this. I mean, why would he? He instead follows the same hymn sheet that many Formula One team principals cling to whenever they're dominating, saying, oh, well, we took a look at the regulations and we did the hardest work and that's just the way it goes. But what Domenicali just said completely undermines that, as in, Domenicali said, yeah, it was the manufacturers that wanted these regulations, not us, so sorry, Toto, Stefano just outed you. The Italian CEO just gave me more reason to believe that it was Toto Wolff who spearheaded these regulations to come into fruition, such as the thing I've shared with you time and time again, that they were more than prepared to drop the MGUH, the most costly and time-consuming and complex part of the previous turbo hybrid unit, the bit that many of their rivals had invested more and more money in to get an advantage, and then Mercedes just goes, ah, well, don't worry about it, we can drop it to bring in Audi and Honda. All of that money is gone, and those rivals would be seething. That's probably why they want revenge and why they're snitching to the FIA, as Toto so claims. And they were the one that decided that, hey, well, since this is an FIA championship, it has some legitimacy, as in this could be something we could take into Formula One to preserve our domination. Yes, the ground effect times were not great because it was aero that was king, not the engine, but now it's the engine again, and look at what Mercedes is doing. But we'll never find out the truth behind the motives, at least not for the next few decades until somebody puts out a book in confidence, but yeah, I mean, the outcome is plenty enough for now. Yeah, at least the chassis and aero this year are working, probably because they came from a broad collaborative process where no single interest dominated. The powertrain is failing as a racing product because that process broke down. One manufacturer's vision of what F1 should become got written into 5 years of regulations, and that manufacturer resumed their top team status because of it. All the while, the sports CEO tells people who noticed that their criticism, whatever, we don't care, and tells the drivers experiencing it firsthand that their platform was given to them by the sport and they should be careful how they use it. However, circumstances have made Mercedes' dominance less assured. There are two less Grand Prix to win, at least for now. We might get these two races slotted back in later than the year, but that's for another video. The point is, though, is that they are still locked into the gap that they've had between themselves and Ferrari and the others since round three, and everyone else is playing catch-up rapidly. Miami could indeed be a different championship, as Toto agrees, as does Fred. And indeed, it does make me think changes are coming. How many changes? We're not too sure. April the 20th will be the day when the F1 Commission meets, and we'll find out for sure not long after. How will this be spun? Because, well, Stefano's got to try and pitch this to the wider public without making himself look like a fool, and the critics going, ha ha, I knew it was wrong, and then not confusing the newer fans who actually might like this and go, well, why are you changing it? No. They're working on it. They've got to come up with a proper pitch. They are a commercial operation. They might say something as, this is a commitment to the sport and proof that F1 listens and the natural evolution of a whole new era. Domenicali and F1 will probably call these changes refinements and nothing more to make the product even better. All while pointing to the global numbers coming from newer markets, the Apple TV growth, the sold-out grandstands, and none of it will be technically false. That's what makes it so hard to argue with in a way. The sport is growing, just not for the people it used to be for, and who are the most vocal on social media. And all that it will do is make the newer fans talk smack toward the older fans. This is just reeking of dividing and conquering, and just making us all fight each other. This is just not right. In my opinion, there will be changes in time for Miami, but in terms of the architecture that the regulations were built upon, the 50-50 split, only this time into the 2026 season, I don't think we'll see changes there. They'll adjust the harvesting limits and the deployment maps to make it a little bit more smooth to limit super clipping, or ideally at some circuits make it a non-issue. They'll call that progress, but the 50-50 split, that will remain for the time being. It might be slowly changed for 2027, or teams may decide to prioritize different things with their ADUO budget, but that is for a later time. It might change depending on where the winds of change start to go as carbon neutral fuel starts to become more cost effective and more easy to produce. If the manufacturers are starting to see in their road going divisions that, hey, we can use V6s and V8s and get the same efficiency as we would do for a complete hybrid situation or an EV car, then hey, cool, we might want to do that. They might be more gung ho to adjust the priority of combustion and electrification if it suits their bottom line. In any case, Carlos Sainz warned the FIA via the GPDA these crashes would happen and would continue to happen. They were told the racing would be exciting, but what we got was Oliver Behrman in the barriers at 50G because the car in front of him was charging its battery going into a very, very long corner. And the CEO of F1 told the drivers to remember who gave them their platform. Also worth noting Antonelli's pole lap at Suzuka. The onboard cut away before 130R and never came back. The official explanation? Oh, it was a technical fault. Then why did you post it before you could actually retrieve the footage? Because you retrieved the footage for the ghost car lap a few hours later. It was only after the public backlash came that they actually posted that ghost car video and said, oh, look, we found the footage now. And then, of course, Lando Norris said the racing is indeed looking like something he does not believe in, that it's not as realistic and authentic as he would like it to, because that pass on Hamilton, he didn't want to make it. The car did. He had no say. But hey, what's the point of complaining? Because the F1 boss says our opinions don't matter. Well, tell that to the drivers flooding a WhatsApp group at midnight about what they think they can change for the sport for the better, trying to fix with words what was broken with money. And what will I flood you here next? This video, which I know you will enjoy, so I'll just go freshen up. I'll be right with you.